The management of this station would like to apologize for anything that may offend you on today's show. Specifically, we'd like to preemptively say we're sorry to women, men, children, the elderly, pets, all major world religions, the governors of all 50 states and their families, Heidi and Spencer Pratt, and anyone who requested a song we did not play. Let's return to the show, which will remain nameless so we can use this apology again in the event we need to fire them after giving in to protesters. And now, for now, here's...
Sure, other stations promise outstanding content, but when it's time to deliver, they fall flat on their ridiculous faces. Enter LA Talk Radio, a cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk station that delivers totally original content without any commercials. Log on to latalkradio.com and get involved with the best talk radio station on the internet. LA Talk Radio, we say what we want.
This station presents Real American Heroes.
Real American Heroes.
Today we salute you, Mr. Failed CEO Bonus Receiver.
Mr. Failed CEO Bonus Receiver.
Generally speaking, if an executive runs a company into the ground, only to be saved by billions of taxpayer bucks, they get fired. Not you. No, you get a multi-million dollar attaboy.
Way to go, you incompetent jerk.
Gee, why don't they give you a medal while they're at it?
Something we can strangle you with, yeah.
So the next time you hear about a corporate president who saved his precious bonus because everyone else saved his butt with a bailout, don't get mad. Get really, really mad at Mr. Failed CEO Bonus Receiver, a real American hero.
Mr. Failed CEO Bonus Receiver.
What else can I say? Except we hate you.
Get ready for the best morning show on any kind of radio. Broadcasting live from the palatial studios of LA Talk Radio. Get ready for Sam and Kara in the morning. Give Sam and Kara a call at 323-203-0815. And now, here are your hosts, Sam and Kara.
Good morning and welcome to May 27th.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning, Sam.
Good morning, studio. We're bringing you another show right on time this morning.
Okay.
As always, we're reliable. We'll be here every day for you.
That's okay.
I'm not going to embarrass you in front
it's,
of your
friends. It's not embarrassing.
But I'll get you after the show. Don't worry about
Don't
it.
Don't we have a meeting anyway?
It doesn't matter. Maybe we'll cancel it because I'm pissed off.
Well, we got to do a show. Do you want to be pissed off on the show?
Yeah.
Okay, go for it. Well, go get
actually,
it out. Get
actually, I told you I'm not going to put you through it now.
You are trying to put
but
me through
But we will.
It.
No, I'm not. Well, you should suffer a little bit, you know. But why don't you go ahead and introduce your friend?
We
don't want to put him in
we don't want him to see mommy
position.
And daddy fighting right now.
Yeah.
You guys, we have an awesome guest that has nothing to do with this. His name is Philip. He is an amazing improv actor. He has a webisode that just came out, and he does theater off of Hooker Alley in Santa Monica, off of Santa Monica Boulevard. Everybody, welcome Philip to the studio.
There we go.
Good morning, friends. Good
welcome,
morning. Thank
welcome,
you.
Philip.
Please don't fight mom and dad.
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, did you feel she was going to get in trouble when you guys were running late? Or?
She maintained a passive attitude, but yeah. I knew it was coming.
Yeah.
We knew it was coming.
Yeah, because it's not the first time, but that's okay.
It's been a while,
Run you
I
over
was
the
a, really a traffic issue. It was really a traffic issue because I went across town.
I know you went across town.
Okay.
But at 8:40, you told me you're picking up your guest. There's no
Sam.
Way you're going to make it on time. Anyway,
okay.
Listen, fuck it. Anyway,
okay.
How are you doing this morning?
Well, I was doing okay.
You were?
I have tons of stories
okay.
to tell, and I don't
oh,
want to
okay.
tell
so
you.
Okay, so now you're going to turn it against me. Okay, let's focus on Philip. Good
Philip,
morning to you,
how's
Philip.
Life? How are you doing?
Oh, my gosh. Life is fantastic. It's raining here in Los Angeles.
Yeah, do you like rain?
I do. I love rain.
I do, too.
You guys should be friends. He loves rain. He can't handle the sunshine.
Yeah. Well, I can handle it, but rain is nice every once in a while, huh?
I like cleaning things up.
Yeah. Are you originally from here, or did you move here?
I am from Florida.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay, so you guys get a lot of tropical rain there, right?
We do.
Yeah.
Good for my bromeliads.
Yeah.
Still from Florida.
Yeah. So were you born and raised there?
I was born in Ohio.
Oh, I see. Okay.
But I was raised in Florida, yeah.
Oh, I see. Okay, how'd you end up in Florida?
Boy, around 10 years old, I decided to call it quits on Ohio. And,
you did.
Yeah, yeah, I got my stick and my satchel and jumped on the local train. And
well, sounds I, good.
Yeah, and then the rest of my family followed.
I
good
see.
Good decision.
Okay, yeah.
No.
Well, okay, we're going to have a long show.
I was born in Florida.
You were born in Florida,
mm-hmm.
too?
I was born in Florida.
Really?
I'm from Texas, but I was born in Florida.
Really?
Yep, Jacksonville.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, well,
see, I learned something new about you every day, you see?
You fall in love with me more?
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't go that far.
I've never seen you look so gorgeous. Anyway.
So you decided to move to Florida, and so what did you do there?
I learned that in 1991, I think when I moved, I learned that going to Florida with a Vanilla Ice haircut was not popular.
Oh, I see.
Really?
As popular as it was in Ohio.
Really?
Really.
Yeah.
Did they give you crap? I mean, what was going on?
Yeah, it was one of those character things, I think, one of those landmarks in my life. And I had, you know, the lines down the side of my hair and the rat tail and
really?
a big wave in the front. And that was the cats up in Ohio.
Yeah.
Really, I kid you not. But in Florida, it did not get me a lot of mileage.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know what? Florida's, I haven't been there forever, but it's, you know, it's, what is it? It's a mix of, like, you've got your natives, you've got your tourists, you've got your snowbirds, like all the, you know, New Yorkers that come down. And you've got, like, a lot of old people, right?
It's a real interesting mix of people. Like, because the whole, you're from Jacksonville, and that's relatively normal, but most of the northern part of it is like Georgia. It's a lot of southern folks.
Really?
Yeah.
Who like their bass on their shirts and on their dinner tables. And and then the middle is, you know,
yeah.
Disney mania, and in the south is Cubans and New York, New Jersey, Jewish, and lots of fun mixes down there.
What part were you from?
Orlando, the middle.
Oh. So growing up in like a tourist place, what is that like? I mean, as far as like, I mean, even like everybody's like, yeah, hi and bye, and they're like, okay, I've seen Mickey Mouse. Like, how does it go?
It's a nice novelty. I mean, we went before we moved there, and that was cool. But when you get down there, and then you know you're working in it, and a lot of the girls that I was dating were princesses at the theme park, so there's that whole ego and.
Really, I bet
you can't treat me like that.
I bet the whole culture in Orlando sort of like revolves around Disney World.
Oh yeah,
right?
For sure.
Yeah, wow. Is it a pretty big town, Orlando?
Not exactly.
Yeah.
There's the downtown's not really. I mean, it's a decent size, but
yeah.
There's not much going on, and then the suburbs kind of rule.
Right. Okay. So you sort of got bored there after a while spending time with Mickey and everything.
Yes.
And you decided to move here? Is that the how it worked?
Yeah, well, I lived in lots of places in between.
Oh,
but,
I see. Okay, so you've been around.
He's a little traveler.
That's like a 9-hour show.
Yeah.
All the places that I've vagabonded
to. Yeah, definitely. We'll sit here and find out, yeah.
So but basically, you grew up in Florida, then did you do the college thing or no?
Yeah.
Went to
school at University of Florida.
Okay. Did you like it?
Several people are probably booing right now, but I can't hear them because I have my headphones on.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was great. It was great.
It was
yeah.
good. And then how did you eventually make your way out to L.A. and do, like, I'm going to be an actor?
The acting thing came a few years after I graduated, but I actually came out to L.A. right after I graduated college just with my buddy on a road trip. He's like, I want to be a writer. I was like, oh, I want to go on a road trip. So we drove out here. And
That's kind of fun.
We lived near UCLA in a fraternity house.
Oh, that's cool.
Much different than I expected UCLA to be.
What was it like?
Lots of really, really smart kids that didn't really have time to party.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And you were looking for the parties.
I was. I was thinking I was going to be like, you know, Ken and Barbie skateboarding around all over the place and being kind of Valley. And was...
So your dream was shattered.
Shattered.
Yes.
It
absolutely.
Was.
How disappointing.
But did you get into the LA thing? I mean, the LA girls, all that whole thing. LA, do you know the...
How do you not get into LA girls, you know?
Well, I mean...
I feel like there was a song coming.
That song with Katy Perry, the new song, LA girl, something so fabulous. Something, something, bikinis on top. It just came out. Have you heard it?
No.
It's not that great anyway. But but it's kitschy, and she's doing this whole... Anyway, look it up, Katy Perry, LA girls. But she's kind of she's doing that whole like magnifying the ideal of what a California girl is like, and just like, you know, the whole carefree rollerblading, just a freaking underwear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've heard that exists at University of California, Santa Barbara.
Oh, really?
Really? A lot of underwear there?
I think so. I think
but
so.
Not so much. I mean, so UCLA wasn't the party experience that you expected.
No, but I was there in the summer. So, you know, to give them respect, maybe it's like that during the school year. And it just wasn't during the summer. But it was just a lot of people studying hard and just a lot of really, really smart people that had their nose to the grindstone.
Yeah. So, I mean, did you graduate in Florida or here?
Yeah, I graduated in Florida.
Oh, I
he just,
see.
I mean,
okay.
That's the funny thing. He already got his degree, but he came out. He's like, I'm going to live on a dorm, yeah, or whatever. College campus, however it went.
Yeah, we came out here, and that was the cheapest thing because we were in a fraternity back in Florida. So we contacted the same
people.
Fraternity out here, and they were like, yeah, you can stay for the whole summer for like $700. So we were like, oh, okay.
Yeah, that's
and,
perfect.
And we got jobs as personal trainers at LA Fitness and...
That's what you do, man.
That part was nice.
Yeah. How was LA Fitness?
Well, like, I'm not particularly plugging LA Fitness, but it was a great experience down there at LA Fitness. The staff and the... No, it was good.
Yeah.
My clients were all, like, 19-year-old girls who needed to, like, gain 5 pounds of tone. And they're
What,
I just feel fat.
Yeah. Really?
What a terrible job, huh? You see, that's what I should be looking for, is training girls.
You should.
Yeah.
What am I doing here?
This is your dream.
I need to be where,
this is your dream, Sam.
I need to be where my mind is.
So 19-year-old girls telling you that they're fat, they're really looking for affirmation, right?
Yeah.
And so what would you tell them? Like, oh, yeah, you need...
I'd get them on the leg press.
Yeah.
I'm like, if you want it, you need to earn it. And I'd put them through workouts that I couldn't possibly do.
These 19-year-old girls?
Yeah.
Well, they deserve it.
And then they pay me.
Yeah.
So it all kind of made sense.
That's funny.
There you go. Do you still do that, personal training?
Once in a while, I'm starting to do, like, boot camp kind of classes.
Mm-hmm.
That's, like, really chic right now.
Well, if you really like it, then it's a good place to be, you know? I mean, if you like doing it.
Yeah, it's,
You're going to get a lot of female clients, too, huh?
Isn't I'm hoping to.
Yeah, that's what you're going for. A friend of mine does it. He gets tons of girl clients.
Yeah.
He does boot camps in the park, you know? And there's tons of women clients, and I think it's probably... And he's a good-looking dude, too, so I think that's how it works.
I see. Okay. It's just like those straight men that go into hairdressing, you know? I mean, the ultimate goal there is to lay their clients, you know? And
I got hit on by a salon dude.
I
went back to Texas, of all places, which, you know,
what?
That shit's not cool. Mm-hmm. He's like, yeah, we went to high school together, and I ran into him. I don't remember him at all. He's like, don't you remember me? And I'm like, no, not really. He goes, I do hair now. And I was like, oh, okay. He's like, and he was complimenting my hair and everything, which was funny. And because I was just dancing up on the dance floors, I'd like sweat dripping. I was like, hey, what's going on, buddy? I'm trying. You know, it's like, don't look logic. I can't talk right now, y'all. I got my accent back. But he was wanting to go out and like get my number. And I'm like, but you do hair.
Uh-huh.
Pretty much.
Right.
That's just nuh-uh.
Not your
nah, come
not
on
your
now.
Company.
How does that work in Texas?
I don't know. He's probably,
I mean, are there a lot of male hairdressers? And if
no,
so,
no.
Okay, good.
I mean, it was kind of a little bit of a city-esque feel, but it's still Texas, so you know, it's not as. But generally, I mean, I've only met one straight hair dude, you know, and even then, it's like, you know, something's a little off. Something they're so into it, they're so professional, they're so into it that there's something a little bit, you know, effeminate about it.
Yeah, I know, but I think it's mostly to be around women and stuff, you know. These guys must have watched the movie Shampoo. Did you ever see that movie with Warren Beatty?
No.
Yeah, that's before your time. You probably hadn't been born yet.
Oh, sorry, I wasn't born yet, Sam.
But this was about this very handsome hairdresser, and he was betting all his clients. You know?
You know, they say that men are emotional manipulators. They don't realize it. Maybe they do. Like, they do realize it. But men can be emotional manipulators. And a lot of times what happens is you hear this. They talk about women as being so manipulative and emotional and this. But I think men really know how to, like, kind of, you know, puppet the strings of women. You know, they know how to build them up.
Yeah, we have to be by necessity,
you
right?
You do. It's just a certain...
Yeah.
It's a skill set you use to freaking, you know... tag the freaking gazelle and bring her back and like chop her up and make a damn burrito out of her and throw away the whatever. But my point is
gazelle burritos. If you don't take anything else away from this morning, you should gazelle burritos.
But seriously, I mean, it's like the little puppet strings, and they know how to build you up and make you feel like you're that, like that you're all they see, and it's just boom. I see through it, but there's been one dude that I'm serious. He's so good at it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, who knows, you know? What can I tell you? So you moved out here and you were with a fraternity for a while?
Yeah, we stayed there. Yeah. Stayed at the fraternity. And, you know, you hope that there's going to be some hijinks.
Yeah. But none of that, huh?
Not a lot, yeah. No.
So, I mean, do you find L.A. to be a party town? Or, I mean, do you go out quite a bit?
I go out to... I'm like a small bar kind of guy.
Mm.
Yeah. I'm not like a... Anything where there's a guy with a clipboard.
Uh-huh.
Including Trader Joe's when you leave and they're trying to get money for kids.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I'm not into that.
I don't like clipboards.
Yeah.
I don't like the Greenpeace thing either.
Well, they need to make money somehow, you know?
Okay, now I'm the villain. I hate the environment. No, that's not true. It's just the approach is just everybody's being hired to do their job, and I respect it. But, you know, it's coming from an angle. It's not like the whole thing.
Right.
I was with this guy I was working at a promo event, and he was this gay dude, and he was hysterical. And this Greenpeace girl just jumps in front of us with her dreadlocks. She's about 5 feet tall. She's like, ha ha, send the whales, woohoo! And he goes, I don't give a hump about your whales. He goes, and then he starts going off about global warming. It's really just part of how our cycle in the Earth ecosystem basically, you know, recycles itself and turns itself over.
Right.
And he went all of that. He's like, I don't give a hump about your whales. I was like, classic. I'm going to steal it.
For the tagline.
Oh,
it's
man.
Good stuff.
I went on a date last night.
You did?
Yes.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
It's just, it's not working out.
It's not working out?
It's not working out, Sam.
Wait, did this you meet this one through the speed dating?
Speed dating?
Okay, it's online speed dating. It's not as bad. You mentioned it on the air.
I did, but I wasn't knowing. You know what? You don't get to talk to me afterwards because you already got your little cut and we're done. That was it. That was our day.
There's nothing wrong with speed dating.
No, it's not, nothing. But this story gets bad.
Yeah?
It gets really bad.
Really? Well, let's hear it.
I think it's a sign. I think it's a sign. Like, I'm just not going to do it. I've been doing online dating and I talk about it regularly on the show.
Okay.
And I'm doing it for material purposes. That
yeah.
I have things
she's
to talk
doing
about.
Research.
Where do you do it through?
It's called computer. It's called computer. It's called Mac.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah. No. I've done. What are they? No, I don't want to go down the list of them.
Okay.
But I recently, just yesterday, I said I went on this site called Speed Date, and it's like hot potato. You're all these people kind of come into your window, and you get to like X them out, or you can chat with them for 3 minutes until your time runs out.
So it's like a game show too.
It's like a game show. It's actually kind of fun.
That's double satisfaction.
Yeah.
It's actually kind of fun, and I did actually go have drinks last night with a dude.
Really?
Yeah, I did.
And when did you meet him? Online?
Yeah, yesterday.
Wow.
Oh, so already you went out.
Yeah,
nice.
Is that bad?
Wow. Well, I didn't say it's good or bad. I mean, it's just unusual, isn't it?
Is it unusual? I mean, I don't do it often. I mean, I think that's the
first
time.
So you must have liked him.
I liked his profile.
Uh-huh.
And we actually had a pretty decent time.
Mm-hmm.
But
did he make you pay?
No.
Good.
Worse.
Uh-oh.
What? He made you drive home?
No, I walked there. I mean, it was like right by my house.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And it's a local.
Well,
place.
I don't know. You tell me. I don't know what's worse than that.
He took both the mints at the end. What a jerk.
His card got declined.
Yeah.
Like his card, and that shit happens, man. It shit happens. But then, like, I didn't bring my wallet with me, and it was one of those, like, because I live right there, and I'm like, oh, whatever, we're just having a couple drinks. The dude's getting it,
right.
And he's like, It kind of was a little bit of like an issue where they were like, hey, so the bill, yeah, what are we gonna do here? He's like calling his bank. It was just so, and you know what? And I'm like, I'm way cool about it. I'm like, you know what? Shit happens. I'm a regular here. I can either come back and pay it, or they'll be cool with me because I like live right here. But it was just men. It's just so uncomfortable to see a man. Not, I mean, obviously it's uncomfortable to not have the bill taken care of. But second of all, it's so uncomfortable to see a man like. Feel so humiliated.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it like kills me.
Yeah.
I like got up, went to the restroom, and then my friends were there, and I was like talking to them at the bar. I'm like, I don't know what the hell's going on right now. And the girl's like, just go back, be cool. She's like, don't make a big issue out of it. This just happened to me the other day. And I was just, I felt so bad for him, and he just felt so humiliated.
Yeah.
And he's since then, it's already been taken care of. But my point is it was just so awkward.
Yeah.
And then like we're walking back towards my place, and it's not like I wouldn't go out with the guy again. I mean, we really didn't have the biggest connection before that, so I wouldn't, I probably won't, be based on the fact that I didn't have a really great connection with the guy. It wouldn't have been the bill issue because shit happens. Right. But it's just seeing a man feel so humiliated like breaks my, just broke my heart.
Right.
And so I'm like, okay, well, I'm like giving him a hug. I'm like, hey, it was great. No, whatever. We had a great time.
Let me pay for the bill with my body.
I'll save
you.
And I just gave him a hug. And I was like, okay, I'll see you later. And I just walked up my street and I looked back and he just had his like head was hanging down and he was walking away and it like was so sad.
Yeah. Somebody came up to panhandle and he just shook his head. He's like, I can't. I have no more.
I mean, can you imagine that though? Has that ever happened to you guys? Have you ever been in a situation where like your card was declined or?
Yeah, but not at a restaurant.
Not at a date.
Not at a restaurant where you can't like undo it. You know.
Yeah.
Like if you buy a product and you go to the counter and
you can just give it back. Yeah.
Yeah. You don't take it, but with food, that is really embarrassing.
You're like, excuse me, let me give it back to you. Yeah. So, but do you, have you ever had that happen though?
It's never happened to me, but when I was a server in Aspen, when I lived in Colorado, it happened to several people, and you could easily make a documentary out of the human response to declining cards because. Yeah.
Is it all different, or is it the kind of same thing?
Some people like. Really nervously try to play it off. They're like, what? There must be some kind of mistake. And you're like, wow, this is the amount of squirming going on. How about we just comp that meal? Because it's getting ridiculous.
Really? Yeah.
But the whole, you know, paying for dinner is like, I mean, in and of it's like a social custom, but it's probably rooted in like the whole. I'm the man. I'm going to take care of things.
Yeah.
You know, but beyond just like chivalry is the wrong word, but, you know, it's I'm here to take care of this and I'm putting meat on the table inadvertently through distributors and a chef and other people.
Yeah. It's provision, right?
So when you fail on that.
I felt embarrassed.
Yeah, but you know what? You gotta also understand that people need to know where they stand with their credit card limit, you know? And if you go out and you suspect that you're near the limit, then you take another card with you.
Or you just don't go out.
Yeah, or you don't go out.
Which is fine. Well, I'm not going to school the guy
either. But I can't imagine that he would do this knowingly.
No.
And, you know, and then get embarrassed like that.
But I know, it was like an accident.
There was a certain amount of responsibility I think he had.
Probably, but at the same time, he was like, he couldn't get in touch with his bank and stuff, so it was just kind of a really uncomfortable. I mean, and then I walked back to the table, and I was like, is everything okay? And I'm like, I can run home and get something. He's like, No.
Well, that's one for the books, for sure.
Well, and I'm just kind of like, you know, is God telling me something? Like, don't date right now or something? Because I've gone on a couple dates, and, like, there's been money issues.
With
not them not really wanting to pay or, like, wanting to go Dutch on the second date after they asked me out. It's, like, weird stuff. And I'm like, am I, like, a money-hungry girl that I want the guy to pay for the meal? Like, the first few rounds of dating, does that make me like really like pretentious? I think it's normal, right?
I don't know. It is normal. It doesn't mean I like it.
Well, but isn't that the way it should be? Like,
why?
The first.
Why?
I'll explain to you why in a second. But
I'm listening.
I'm listening.
It should be that if a man is asking a woman out and he's pursuing her, okay? Mm. He is pursuing her, not she pursuing him, that there's certain protocols that take place because you are establishing a certain atmosphere, a certain respect, and you're requesting of her. And so I think that then you assume that responsibility. And it's not just because you asked her out, but there's also something like, as they say, you know, sex is emotional for women, provision is emotional for men, and it says a lot about their ability to, you know, have their shit together and, you know, provide for family and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's not something that you become legalistic about, that he always has to pay or he has to always make more money, or it doesn't have to be like that. But the heart of the person should want to be a provider, because I think that's how men are made. They're supposed to be providers on some level.
Yeah, but you're going dating. It's not like you're getting married.
No shit, time, Sam. You know? But if a guy asks me out, he better friggin' pay if he asks me out.
Okay. Well, I think what's interesting about if he asks you out is, I don't know what the statistic is, but like, I would say that like 80% of the time it's the guy asking the girl out.
It should be. Until
I mean, as far as pursuing, I think the way this. In most places, society set it up is that the guys are always the ones pursuing the women.
Right.
So, I mean, because...
Why is that? Where is that? But where does that come from? Like, let's not get all pissed, because let me tell you something. Ooh, I'm going to get hot. I'm going to get hot up in here. Because I had
She's telling us not to get pissed.
No, I'm not getting pissed. I'm getting passionate. Pissed versus passionate. Two different things. Because I had a conversation. If you guys can't tell, I'm doing a gospel wave at home. Anyway, gospel wave in the house. So our psychologist that was on the show, she and I chatted about this. And I said, some men argue that, well, you know what? this isn't the primitive days. Women make just as much or can make just as much money as men. And it's not like, oh, I come back with two bisons and this guy only had two rabbits. So now you're going to date me or have kids with me because I can provide. And there's a biological, there's a psychological, biological hardwiring in men and women. And then she goes, well, you can argue this factor. Men are attracted to body shapes, mm-hmm. like, you know, boom, smaller, boom, because it represents fertility.
Right.
And even though women can have babies with different body types or that are older in life that can have children, men are still biologically hardwired to go for someone younger with a specific body shape, generally speaking. And it's just as stupid to ask them to give up what they're attracted to, you know what I mean, as to, you know, tell a woman, like, you know what, you shouldn't have these demands or these expectations because it's 2010. You mm-hmm. know what I'm saying? There's like psychological hardwiring going on there.
Yeah,
you know?
But I think you're subscribing to cultural norms, you know? I mean, the thing is that it's not like that in nature, and we've created
it that way.
It's not.
Men, even across different cultures, she said it's proven that men are attracted to certain width and hips, things like that. It's a sexual, like when women... They say when...
But why did it used to be different in the old days? You know,
when was it different? What are you talking about?
Well, when you look at like Rubenesque art and things like this, you know, I mean, there was like times where chubby women were sexy.
No, that's, you know, kind of falls in line with fertility, though. That
okay,
I'm talking about what looks like it's not fertility, which would be age, looks and it has the representation of people's thoughts, biologically speaking, that it's not fertile, and then smaller, like narrow... Mm-hmm. No boobs, no hips. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And that's what she's saying. And that if you argue, well, it's 2010, women can have babies, blah, 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 and age doesn't really matter. And, you know, it doesn't matter really the size of the hips. I mean, maybe it's not as roomy in there, but maybe the kid's not going to get a huge lunch snack of boobs. But, you know, whatever. Life can still go on, you know, circle of life. But the men, men are still hardwired that way for procreation. And it's just the way it is.
Yeah, but
maybe this is changing the subject too much. Is curvy starting to be back in?
Curvy?
Yeah.
I sure as hell hope so, because that's what I'm going for.
Well, because I mean, we've been on like stick thin for a number of years now.
Yeah, but I think that's too. I definitely think that the stick thin thing is like sometimes it's more of I think that there's been a real, as the feminist movement and as things have really changed, and women are like working women, and now it's become more like women are supposed to be same level as men. It's almost like there's a lot of lack of femininity, I think, of what is natural, and a lot of women are kind of taught to kind of let go of those things. So it's like super in fit, super shape, or super little, and it's kind of like deny those woman things because it's like you don't really need them.
Oh, right.
You know, yeah. You got to be the working woman, or you got to be. I kind of feel like that has something to do with it.
Yeah. Okay. You see, but I think the thin woman is a modern thing. I don't think.
Yeah,
yeah.
It is.
Yeah. And that's what we're conditioned to go after. Not only that, but I think some men are embarrassed to go out with an overweight woman, you know, because
of
how people would look at them or what they think people would think.
Well, I think she was not necessarily referring to weight, although that's a preferential thing. Mm-hmm. I think she was talking about shape.
Mm-hmm.
It's the shape. I mean, the shape can be on a petite or larger woman. I mean, if those proportions are there. I mean, mm-hmm. peripherally speaking, mm-hmm. that's kind of what men are looking for as far as fertility.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't, I mean, generally, maybe there's a certain, maybe guys like women that are more smaller mm-hmm. or, you know, more large. I don't really know, but I think it's kind of what it represents, you know.
Mm. But as far as the way that women view men, if you had the same guy with the same smile, the same suit,
uh-huh.
The same sense of humor, and then you had like, you know, the their income, like
mm-hmm.
on a board above their head, and one of them said $32,000 a year, and the other one said $160,000 a year.
Well, what do you think?
Women are always going to go for the $160,000.
And why wouldn't they? Would they?
I mean, it makes.
Why wouldn't they? Though?
It makes sense, I suppose.
But I think
if they're exactly the same.
I think you need to use a different. I think a better example would be this. Guy A, you have a great connection with. He's totally great. It's just like super fireworks fun, great. You know, not making a lot of cash, but he's got a good heart. He's a cool guy. He'll be there. He's loyal. Whatever. Then you got the second dude. He's cool. He's fun. He's nice, but he's really dependable, and he makes a buttload of money. And it's not the same kind of like, but there's just such a certain stability there. To me, I think that I would definitely go with guy A, because to me, that's where my values are. Like, I really, you can have money, lose money. It doesn't, you know what I mean? But if you have those staple foundational things, I mean, but if guy A is a slacker versus not rich, those are two different things. Like, right, right. He needs to be ambitious and have dreams and goals, but it doesn't necessarily mean that he has to be, like, a millionaire. Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
But I think what when women are going after guy B and they don't value those connections as much, but they really just want that stability.
Right.
I mean, to each his own, but I don't personally agree with that. I think that's going to be a very lonely, unfun life. Like,
yeah,
it's not fun.
I mean, yeah. I agree with you. You know,
it's like,
I mean,
not
because
fun.
you're stuck living with a person. You know, and that the same thing goes for looks too. You know, I mean, you can settle for someone who looks great and all that, but if there's nothing inside, you know, after a while, you just like. The looks don't really mean anything, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, I mean, if you look at all these stars that are getting divorced or getting cheated on, like Halle Berry is gorgeous. It's like, really going to cheat on Halle Berry? Because she's just not hot enough for you, huh? She's just not doing it. Just,
But it's not about being hot
enough. Exactly, that's my point.
Look, it's Sandra Bullock also, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's not about that. Men just look for different, you know? And that's what women don't understand. It's like, you know, that chick doesn't look as good as me, you know, the one he's cheating with or whatever. But men just look for different.
Well, that's because romance, solely the romantic feelings, are built upon mystery. Mm-hmm. And so with that, when you have mystery between a man and woman, they get to superimpose and project what their fantasy of who you could be and who you might be. And they get to discover, right? And then they put it onto them. They put it onto them. So you're dating a girl and, you know, you like the way she smiles or blah, 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 and you get to know some things about her and you're intrigued and now your mind is racing and you get to discover and you're making up who she is. And then once you get to actually know her and then you like her, you develop intimacy and then through intimacy develops attachment and you lose the romantic mystery. You have to go back and infuse romance by taking time apart and doing those things and then coming back together and having, you know, your own lives to kind of share. But that's what happens. But that our psychologist, was it Patty? Was her name?
Yeah.
She was saying how most people that are happier or they study happiness in life have attached relationships. Mm-hmm. So you kind of forsake that mystery part, which you could chase all day long, right? Mm-hmm. You can find a million people to chase, and then as soon as you know something about them and it becomes commonplace, like you take the most amazing person and you become really close to them, well, guess what? Their amazingness becomes commonplace. You're used to it. But then if you get away from them for a while or you guys do things together and you get to see different sides of them and or they've done their own thing and y'all come back together and you're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe it. And you're like, oh my gosh, you've been... And then you have all this kind of infused excitement that you have to kind of build, you know, together. But this lady once said, not Patty, but a different lady said, what's the key to your marriage? How do y'all make it work? And she's like, I don't do lunch. I don't do lunch with my husband. Mm-hmm. Like, basically, she still dates her husband.
Right.
Like, they don't do mundane things together.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it works. I don't know.
Sounds artificial to me.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting dynamic that men and women have to spend time apart to stay close, but I don't disagree.
Well, I think it's a balance, right? You got to like know the person and do things together and build intimacy. But at the same time, if you're lacking and if you don't have romance, then I mean, romance is built on mystery. So,
no, totally true.
You know,
I mean, I've known so many people that have been in long-term relationships and engaged and things like that, and one of them like decides to take time off their job and go back to grad school, and so they have a different schedule and they're spending more time together, and all of a sudden things start to fizzle.
Oh, really?
And you're like, oh.
Yikes. I just can't stand the way he chews that damn cereal. I got an issue with chewing people. I got an issue.
Yeah.
I mean, I have this weird sensitivity to sound.
Was I making too much noise?
No. He's no.
So you don't like people who eat loudly, or is that what it is?
It's weird because it's so hypocritical because I'm a messy eater. I mean, I eat with my mouth closed, but I'm usually have it on my face somewhere, definitely on the grill somewhere, or between. I'm serious. Like, I had a salad down there yesterday.
On the date?
No, not a date. That's why I get nervous eating like on a first date or second date with a guy.
Yeah,
like, aim for the mouth.
She said she's uncomfortable eating with someone.
Yeah, I am, because I'm like, aim for your mouth. Because I'm kind of like a, get up in it. Yeah, it's all up in your hands. You're like, try this. Blah, blah, blah. Like my roommate and I one time, my roommate Sarah and I went out and we were like eating. I was like, we had all these friends and that some of them were closer than others. And I'm like, Sarah, taste my hamburger. It's so amazing. And I take it and I give it to her. And like part of the bread is even soggy where I ate it. And she's like, bit down on that. We're eaters. She's like, bit down on that damn thing. But we're like sisters, you know, but that's how I like to eat. It's intimate. It's fun. It's like sharing food is fun and sexy or whatever. So, but no, I get nervous because I'm like, oh man, that's going to get everywhere but like my mouth or Anyway. Yeah. So
food is not romantic or sexy. I don't see
you don't
that.
Think so?
No, I don't see that. Do you?
Oh my gosh, y'all.
I mean, no, I mean for me food is food.
I mean it's food is food. It's not like I'm like, man, those potatoes, I'm getting turned on. It's not like that. Yeah. But it's a shared intimate experience in your it's sensual. It's sensual. It can be sensual.
You're weird.
I think no, I'm not. I think the right girl can make anything sensual, but in general
she's like, look at this glue. This is some hot glue.
Hot glue, huh?
Well, all I can say, I've never been attracted to a woman because of the way she eats.
Not the way she, well, yeah. Not the way she eats, but the enjoyment and like cooking and everything. But my point is going back to it, is just making sure that, okay, so I'm a messy eater, mm-hmm. pretty much, because it's a full contact sport. Mm-hmm. But hearing people chew, it's an issue I have. It's,
really?
And it's my issue. And it's like a weird OCD thing. And I don't have the right to be like self-righteous and be like, I can't believe you're chewing so loud, because I'm a messy eater. Mm-hmm. Like, it's so not even... A plus B doesn't even equal C. But I'll be in a freaking movie theater, and I'll lined up with other friends, and they've got their popcorn. I'm like, can you chill out on the freaking popcorn? Or I have to go sit on, like, the other end. It's very old person.
Huh. You know? So it's everybody. It's not just strangers. It's even if it's friends.
Oh, yeah. It's mainly more of my friends, too. Because then I can tune in more to their chewing habits. Yeah. And I can actually... Like Claire, when she eats... She'll clang, 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 like that the spoon hits the thing a lot. Yeah. And then she eats it and she says, she makes this noises. And then Sarah, when she eats, like, just doesn't even freaking close her mouth. And, you know, she's just churning it up for everyone to hear. And I'm like, I'm like a straitjacket. I'm like, And I'm like the most messiest. It's just, it doesn't even make sense. I have no right to be that precious.
Well, you should include on your online profile.
Don't
say
be a nasty ass chewer.
Yeah, don't be a loud chewer.
Be very specific with that.
Yeah.
I think that's...
So you don't get offended.
Some of my turnoffs are loud chewing. Anyway, so do you guys have super
pet peeves? So, I mean, but did you like the guy? I mean...
I did like him. He was attractive. He was really tall, which I love. Mm-hmm. He's 6'5".
Mm-hmm. Whoa.
Yeah, that's a big man. I love big men. Mm-hmm. And he was cool. I mean, he was... We had a cool time. It was a little strained. I open up quickly with people and I get to know people quickly. And especially in LA, you find a lot of people just don't have those kind of friendships.
Right.
So then when you're giving somebody that attention or you're listening to them, they maybe think there's this really, really deep, deep connection because they're not used to that. But I have a lot of that with people, like daily. Mm-hmm. So I think he was like, I never felt this. I was giving me a connection. He's like, I'm going to get a connection. I don't like this in a long time. Connection. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. Anyway, cool. I'm going to take care of that bill.
Yeah. So after that mishap, he didn't expect a kiss or anything, huh?
No, I mean, it wasn't even that. It wasn't to punish him, but I wasn't feeling it.
Not to punish him, but I mean...
I wasn't feeling it prior. I said that there wasn't that depth of a connection. And then also, when you see a man feel so bad, it just makes me like... I just want to let him do his thing. I'm going to go... I don't want to be there to have to like... Because, I mean, like, the way I grew up is... if we're going to go there. I don't know if we want to go there.
Sure.
But the way I grew up is I saw my dad really emasculated, and mm-hmm. I saw him have to really build himself. He was in a really bad place, and I was really too young to have to kind of be emotionally his support. So I really... It hits too close to home. Like, I don't want to be near a man that... Not, like, not friends or whatever, but I just don't want to be in that space with him if he feels that... down, you know what I mean? It's not that I would, if I was with somebody and we were together, that's different, but I just kind of like, okay, I'll let you do your thing.
You try to empathize with
him. It hurts too much for me. I think it hits something, you know, something emotional. So because I looked over and I saw him walking away and his head was, and he's like this big tall dude and he's like his head is like down. I felt so bad for him. Yeah. It was so sad. Anyway, better topic. Let's get on a better topic. Anyway,
so you were gonna have a photo shoot yesterday.
I did,
right?
Have him. I want you to see the photos.
You did?
I did.
Really?
For the Now camp, the Body Heart campaign. Love your body now.
Oh, really?
What body parts do you think that I liked? Go for it, Sarah.
I don't know. So was it like full body shots and stuff?
No, I mean, it's just, I'm a glam girl. Like, I love frills to the max is what I call it. Frills to the max, max. But this was like earthy campaign. It was like minimal makeup and like this and like I'm serious and kind of like, I love my body, but I'm like... I'm a woman and I'm natural and I'm like, that's just not my style. Mm-hmm. So I was a little critical with the shots. I was like, can we Photoshop this shit? Can we do a little retouching? And she's like, we kind of have to walk the walk. You know, we can't just talk the talk. Like, as far as, like, loving your body. I'm like, right. No, I love my body. I just love it a certain way. You know, that's all. I just love certain things in their place a certain way. But the campaign is loving women, like, loving who they are now. And they would put, like, hearts on body parts that you love, right?
Oh, that's
and
cool.
It's funny because prior to me getting involved, I looked at the campaign, and all the girls are really beautiful, and they look very much like models. And I know some of them, and they're fucking pretty actresses, you know? So I was like, they need to get some people in there that are going to let some shit show. Let's be like, love y'all body now. And like just cheese up some cellulite or something and be like, put a heart around it. Like, put a heart around a big patch of cellulite. Like, yeah, bitch. Yeah, what do you
I
think
love
about
that
this?
Part.
No, but my point
that's
is...
That's what it should be about.
Well, I kind
of... If you have a bunch of models up there, then everybody's loving their body now
I
all
know,
the time.
I know. And but then it's... So then I get involved. Dun, dun, dun. And I kind of, like, let it hang out a bit. And then I'm like, shit, that's a little too much. Can we... We need to tap it up, smack it up, flip it, rub it down. We need to staple gun it. We need to do something. But,
Nip and tuck.
Anyway, but I know I have the photos. I'll show them to you. They're actually nice. They're just I'm just not used to seeing my pictures in those ways. My pictures are usually really awesome and very fanciful. Mm-hmm. Fanciful. They're not
fanciful.
Like fanciful this. But these are beautiful actually. They're very they're beautiful in the sense of like they're very like serene water. Mm-hmm. Serene water with the lotion dripping and
so
little
where
leaf.
Was the location?
It was at her place. She did a great job actually. She did a really good job. I'm just
so it was
I
indoor
just
indoor or outdoor?
It was outdoor. It was outdoor.
Yeah.
They're black and white photos, and it's just really pretty much my face. But I have they did a heart on everyone's cheek, and then I put a heart around my birthmark because I'm like, we need some scuzzy things in there. I'm like, let's put some fucking real stuff in here, like birthmark. And then of course I did one on my cleavage, and I was like, huh. And she's like, that's too much boob. I'm like, sweetheart, it's never. It's just how it is. It goes on for days. Like she's like, pull it up, and I was kept pulling it down.
Yeah, you just tell her I can't help it, you know.
I kept pulling it down. I was like,
too much boob.
Hey, she's like, it's too sexy. I'm like, I can't help it. Hey, and I was doing all that stuff, but yeah, they just, I don't know. I think that they're beautiful shots. Mm-hmm. I think I look a little homeless in the pictures, but yeah. What are you going to do?
Yeah. What are you going to do?
Homeless people should love their bodies too.
Homeless people should love their bodies now. That's the thing. But the thing is I think the bigger message, which is pretty cool, is that I don't think it's about loving everything about yourself. I think that's kind of narcissistic, but what I do think is not letting what you don't love kind of dominate your now moment, meaning you can still live life, you can still be who you want to be, blah blah blah, you know.
Right.
Men don't have these issues, right? Do they?
I think they do some, but not to
both,
that extent at
you
all.
You guys are both like, when is this part of the show over?
Well, we are going to have another guest here, and Philip, you stay right where you are, okay? We're going to have another person joining us. It's Simon Gowen, and he's got a show usually right after us.
Oh, yeah,
on
Simon,
Channel
yeah.
2. Yeah. So I invited him to come in, and it should be a lot of fun. So everybody stay with us. We'll be back right after this.
You are listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
Don't you hope it's going well? Shitty Talk Radio proliferates the internet. Two people have teamed up to save the world. It's Sam and Kara in the morning, only on LA Talk Radio.
Okay, and we have Philip in the studio. Simon is going to be here in a few minutes. And
is Simon running a little late? We're going to have a chat with him, huh?
She's going to take it out of him.
I'm going to make an example out of Simon for me, for you. Okay, yeah. Can we do that?
No, he's not late. I mean, it's 10 o'clock.
He'll be here in a minute. It's deflecting.
So, Philip, do you have anybody in your life right now, a female, or are you on the prowl?
Oh, I'm on the prowl.
Are you really?
Yeah. Big time hunt going on.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
This is hunting season.
23 hours a day.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. That's what we got to do, you know, as males.
I don't know the entire lion schedule, but I remember seeing a video in high school that they hunt, like, relentlessly.
Mm. Oh, do they really?
But they don't really partake in the fun stuff, except for but once a year, and it's for like 40 hours.
Yeah. Oh, really?
What's the fun stuff? What
was
do you
that?
Mean?
Like board games and barbecues and stuff.
Lion sex.
Yeah.
Well, that's fun stuff when you're in like your 30s, but when you're like a 20-something lion, then you can do clubs.
Yeah.
Do they? But isn't it like one male dude and like a bunch of women that do all the damn work, and he just sits back and he like does them and, you know, like wins my food? Isn't that how it works?
Yeah. Yeah.
That would be nice. That's a good arrangement.
That's how it goes.
So you're on the prowl.
I'm on the prowl.
Yeah. Anybody on the horizon there that you like? I mean, how often do you date? Do you go out a few times a week or?
I would when I work on set, when I do, you know, stand in work or if I get any principal work and I'm on set, like I usually meet a lot of girls. But when I'm living more normalcy, doing events and just getting down to the beach for volleyball and stuff, then it's a little slower, but.
It's that you feel like the work brings more potential.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, if you're working on set and you see pretty people all the time.
Yeah.
But you're not getting the best stuff.
What?
You're getting a lot of girls who move to LA and want to be an actress. Oh, what's your name? Ooh, yeah. Great. Let's go out.
That's pretty much what you find out here. Yeah.
So you mean like so they're pretty, but it's just not a lot of nuts and bolts going on up there.
Yeah, I've been told recently by a friend that I should be hunting downtown.
Mm.
I should be going to, like, I don't even know what spots
hunting
are downtown. But, like...
Downtown's fun, though. I'm actually gonna hit it up. Yeah. Actually, because I know I'm a really good spot. I just found out. Anyway, so you should go downtown. That's what
I'm saying. I've heard downtown is, like, you know, you meet women that are, you know, already driven and they have careers. And,
yeah.
And they're used to working, like, you know, in an office or whatever.
Do you want to date, like, a normal girl, right? It's kind of nice, huh? If you're like the star, you want to be the normal person.
Yeah, I mean, I keep my options open. I don't mind someone who's like really quirky, and I don't mind dating another a girl in entertainment. But yeah, like, you know, the schedules are weird and the money, people's incomes are weird.
Mm-hmm.
But my friend's like, dude, it's great. It's like you go downtown and you know you meet these girls and they work all week and they work like, you know, 40, 50 hours, 60 hour weeks sometimes. And when they go out, they want to have fun. They're not worried about like meeting the right dude who might be a producer and all
that's
this.
That's nice, huh? That's refreshing.
Yeah. Could be nice.
Well, let me know. They say that downtown is such an intersection for so many different industries, whereas when you're more in Hollywood, it's Hollywood.
Yeah.
The
but downtown after 5 o'clock is dead. You
well,
know,
they're, they're resurrecting it. A lot of great restaurants.
Yeah, that's what they're saying.
Go to the Art Walk. You know, do the Art Walk.
Maybe.
Yeah,
know.
We were there. I mean, you know,
you
our studio used to be there downtown,
yeah.
And we were there all the time. And I can tell you that at 5, 6 o'clock, everything closes down because there's no people there, you know? So there are a couple restaurants and a couple clubs, and that's it. But
you don't get the traffic that you probably get other places, right?
Yeah.
What do you mean traffic?
I mean like just like foot traffic. Like if you go to
don't get that.
Silver Lake or something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. No, our downtown is very unusual.
It
know?
Is unusual. Yeah. But
it's like Chicago. Probably.
We did the LA Comedy Shorts Festival was downtown and we went to these awesome hotels and they have great rooftop patios and bars that are big with like these little Chinese or Japanese gardens and I was like, this is cool. I like it. It's
yeah,
kind of
it is
she-she.
Nice and cool.
It's kind of she-she a bit. Made me feel frou-frou.
She-she?
She-she frou-frou.
A she-she frou-frou. Yeah, I felt very fancy.
Yeah.
Very fancy.
So what do you do on movie sets? How do you, what do you do there? Are you an actor?
I'm an actor.
Oh,
and,
I see.
Sometimes I do production stuff. I've done some PA work, but yeah, mostly.
You said that you like to write, though, right? I mean, didn't you say you were coming out to write? Oh,
no,
my dad was your friend.
Friend.
Yeah, my friend. Yeah.
Yeah, you wanted the road trip.
So how did you go though from like living in Florida and you're like, I'll do a road trip? Did you think in the back of your head, oh, I'll try acting when I get out here, or what do you mean? Like, how did that come into play?
It was a couple year process actually between that time and when I got into it. I kind of suppressed my acting when I was throughout, I guess, the first half of my life.
Mm-hmm.
My sister was an entertainer. She's a dancer. She still is.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I just I always went like the sports route, and mm-hmm. then, but I always loved like Saturday Night Live and In Living Color. If you haven't seen In Living Color in a while, go grab it. It's such a phenomenal show. I don't know if. Unless you hate it.
I used
to
watch it a long time ago.
No, it was good. It was good. It was really good.
Jim Carrey started there, right?
Yeah.
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 And the Wayans brothers.
Yeah. It's like one of those pioneer shows that was.
Yeah. They're pretty genius. And I went up to New York for a promo last year, and I was in Harlem, and it's like every cat walking around in Harlem is like a Wayans brother character. It's
really?
Great. Like, if you've never gone up there and just like. Been like a fly on the wall in Harlem, just go up there during the day and just stand there, and you'll see like 9 of the craziest characters walk by you, all with different like postures and
wow.
It's phenomenal.
That's good material. So you're saying that's probably where you got his stuff from, huh?
Probably, but they're genius anyways.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I always
New York
that
is
stuff.
A cool place. Did you live in New York too?
No, I visited a bunch and worked there a lot, but
yeah,
never.
That's
never
interesting
called that
for a visitor to go to Harlem. You know, it's not the the main attraction there.
Yeah, I was doing this campaign for Marshalls of all companies because they're expanding their women's shoe department.
Perfect. I don't even know if I just cast a check. Don't ask
this.
Questions. You know.
They paid us like $40 an hour, and we were walking around with a silver platter with like. These really expensive shoes that they have there that I guess have been like knocked off from the department stores.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And so we're like walking around like the whole thing was male models walking around with shoes on a platter. And we're in Harlem. them ladies love shoes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But it was like, what? Why are we? No, there should not be a bunch of Caucasian guys walking around in Harlem with shoes on platters.
No, I just went to, I just did a promo in a place called Lake Elsinore.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
People call it Lake
Skydiving
Snow.
There.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How did you know that? Are you going to go skydiving?
I was going to go last week for my birthday.
Really? Was it your happy birthday? Happy birthday. Happy
yeah,
birthday.
Happy Thank birthday.
You. How old are you now? Just tell us.
42.
Such a liar.
Yeah.
Whatever. That's hot, though. I think 40 people in their 40s are good looking. Wait a second. So how old are you, really?
31.
31. How's it feel?
It's great.
Yeah. 31's a good age.
Yeah.
It's a good man age, huh?
Yeah.
You think
sure
so?
Sure is, yeah.
So, Lake Elsinore.
They say it's your birthday.
Flash him, Sam. Flash him.
I just had visions of the Blues Brothers. I don't know why. That was great. Well, thank you for that.
Yes. Sure. Happy birthday.
Yeah.
So Lake Smells More is what they call it. And it's Sarah and I get this promo gig. It pays really well. It's last minute. I'm in the middle of this place called this just little town.
Mm-hmm.
And usually if you do promo work, it's in a big place with lots of people, lots of foot traffic. And I'm outside of this place called Sandy's Electronics. And
oh, Sandy's, yeah.
And I'm like giving people this, it's called Vigo, which is, I don't speak Spanish, but I told them I did.
It's the brand in the grocery store, yeah.
It's basically a calling card to Guatemala.
Oh.
So I'm in the middle of like this small, sleepy town, but has an underground drug meth thing going on.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like barely any white people. So I'm really scared. I'm just playing. But it's the same funny thing is these two blonde girls and we're passing out. I'm like, hola, tu necesitas un papel por tu, you know, hablar con familia esta Mexico. Gracias. Un momento, por favor. Can you take a picture? Basically. So I'm saying all this stuff in the middle of like, it was the same thing. It was like, how do these people, it's like highway robbery. These companies are like, yeah, we got a promo company. Let's market your shit.
Yeah.
Sandy's Electronics.
Convincing the clients.
Yeah. I'm like, we saw 5 people the whole day. There's like nobody there.
Yeah.
Wow.
Like, whatever, you cash your check and you go.
Yeah.
Yep.
So you drove all the way there just to do that?
Yeah, it was really? Great though. I mean, it's good money and you know, it's non-commitment. Yeah. You don't have to use your brain too much. I just had to remember my speaking Spanish skills quickly. Probably cussed a few people out, didn't know it.
Yeah.
Either way, it was gut is what I'm trying to say. But no, awkward, kind of awkward. Like, how is this happening? This is my life right now.
Nice. But next time you go, yeah, you can jump out of a plane. I heard it's good.
I'm supposed to go skydiving.
Yeah, she said she was going to, right?
I'm supposed to be going this summer.
Really?
With a friend of mine. And I'm kind of like, well, you know, we're supposed to be doing those things where you go through the trees. What is it called? Zip line?
Yeah, yeah, great.
Supposed to be doing those things and a bunch of, like, big extreme activities. I'm like, okay, this is totally a guy trip, but I'm down. And then he's like, yeah, we're going to finish it by going skydiving. I'm like, what is your problem? Do you just, I mean, is this just, you have enough thrills? Is this just, you have to fly? Like, you got to figure, you got to make sure that that gravity still works. Trust me, it's working, dude. It's in full effect. Don't, you know, I can't stand to fly. I'm not that naive. You know that song?
Mm-hmm.
Men weren't men to ride with clouds between their balls or whatever.
No matter how.
Me. I'm on, anyway, but my point is that, you know, throw myself to plummet at Earth.
Yes.
I don't
just
know.
For a thrill.
As a man with testosterone, I don't know if gravity works. I think we need to keep testing the whole jumping out of airplanes
yeah.
thing.
Yeah. That and is the Earth still...
Would you do it? I mean, would you
I did, yeah.
Off? Oh,
well, you've
you
done
did.
It.
It was top three moments of my life.
Really?
One, well, not in that order, but I know one of them was when I was birthed, but I have such a fuzzy recollection of that.
Yeah. Well, it does happen.
Yeah, but I know it was a big one. I know that was a really good time for me. And the third one, I don't know, but the skydiving was definitely in the top three.
Really?
So what was the skydiving like? I mean, were somebody strapped to your back or you to their back?
Yeah, somebody was strapped to my back.
Was it a guy?
It was a guy.
How did that feel?
Do you think he really thought about that? He just wants to stay alive, for crying out loud.
Yeah, but
when I was on the edge of that plane,
there's got to be a moment where you're like,
and my face was starting to flap, and my arms were starting to spread, and he, you know, patted me, and he's like, "We're about to go." I was like, "I hope I can trust you." No, it was great. It was great.
Really,
I didn't really think about the
guy
behind
me. So you enjoyed it, huh?
Oh, phenomenal! I was debating between bungee jumping and skydiving.
Don't bungee jump.
Well, I thought like bungee jumping, yeah, no big deal, because I've done like cliff jumping before, and it's like. You know, I don't have a problem with it. And
what are you nuts? What's cliff jumping, real quick? That's just jumping off a cliff?
Just like diving from like 60, 70 feet, stuff like that.
Is it bad for you? It can hurt your neck and stuff if you hit
if
the
you
water.
If you land wrong, you could yeah.
Bad, yeah, bad. But you land that if it's not deep enough.
But you land in the water, yeah. Right? The water.
Yes, that's the idea.
it's not seeming as long as okay, you're still here, so yeah, I'm smart. Go on.
So I thought bungee jumping would be a piece of cake compared to jumping out of a plane. But everyone that I talked, this is when I was the first time I was down in New Zealand for a couple of months. Mm-hmm. Everyone I spoke to was like, bungee jumping is so much scarier. And I was like, how is that?
Yeah.
So the first time I did bungee jumping first, and it was only from about, you know, 43, 44 meters. So not really that tall. It was over this beautiful river. Mm-hmm. But I got to the edge, and the lady's like, just let your body fall.
Yeah.
Like, and I did it, and it scared the living hell out of me.
More so than skydiving?
And then when I went skydiving, it was really a piece of cake.
Yeah.
Wow.
Phenomenal.
That's cool.
You should definitely go.
I don't know how you can do it. You know, I mean, to me, it's like extremely scary.
I would think
we can go, Sam.
Yeah.
We can go.
I will pass on that for now.
No, throw him out. I want to see what happens. Throw Sam out. I want to see your cheeks flap.
Yeah. I'll take you so that you don't have to have that uncertain, uncomfortable feeling of who's this guy behind me and can I trust him with my life.
Yeah.
I'll go with you.
I see. And you think that's going to make it any better for
me? I'll read the For Dummies book on skydiving. I think I've seen it.
Well, our next guest is here, Simon Gowan. Good morning to you, Simon.
Good morning, Sam. How are you?
Oh, man, that just... Whoops. That was like some kind of time warp or something. That was like...
Hold
on
a second. Yeah. Okay, the mic's just collapsing, but I'll just put my head a little bit lower down and we're fine. But, you know,
it's developing scoliosis as we speak.
Yeah. You know, I have to say, guys, you know, what is it about a little bit of rain? You know, you get to LA, a little bit of rain, the whole, like, traffic comes to a standstill.
Mm-hmm. Thank
Nothing
you, see,
works,
Sam?
You know?
Yeah, I was, like, late, so that's partly.
Did yeah. No, that's true, though. I mean, it does happen to the traffic in L.A. You
it
know,
does.
People go crazy, you know?
Specifically this morning, that was a hard word to get out.
And it's not even, like, strong rain or anything, you know? It's just, like, drizzling out there, you know? How far did you have to come, Simon?
Well, you know, for me, it's normally about a 20-minute trip up to the studio.
Mm-hmm.
And
What part of town do you live?
I live in Santa Monica.
I see.
Yeah,
okay.
So Santa Monica up here. So what are we looking, 6 or 8 miles or something? But it reminds me of... you know, one of the maddest stories back in England, they announced that the National Rail Network was going to close down. And they were going to close down because there were leaves on the railway tracks.
Uh-huh.
So it shut the whole national system down, having leaves on the railway track.
Now, really?
I don't know if you've been to England, but if you go to England, there's trees everywhere.
Yeah.
So the chances of leaves being on the tracks are about, like, you know, 10 to, you know, 9 to 10 or whatever.
Yeah.
Out of 10. so it shut the whole system down. It's almost as mad as, like, the rain. A little bit of tiny rain here closing down the whole traffic system.
They really did do that?
Yeah, and you know what they're going to do here in LA is they're going to have FEMA The National Disaster Agency come and look into this problem of rain in LA to see what they can be doing.
Okay.
It's happened a number of times this year, and they really need to get their butts out here.
Yeah, rain in LA.
I mean, we can't make a habit out of it. We've got to keep our desert reputation up, you know? I mean, what are you raining? You're not desert. Fucking desert. You're not desert. Bullshit. This is friggin' tropical Cuba or whatever, yeah. You know?
Exactly. We're totally lied to by that commercial that has all those actors on, you know, with all the...
Oh, yeah.
Jay Leno and all that.
Yes.
It's not true. It's really a rainy state like Oregon.
Yeah, they're going to start having to pull that one off. Yeah. Yeah. That's a funny freaking advertisement, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
When are you coming? What is it? What's her name? Maria Shriver? She says it just like a freaking news reporter. They're like, oh, a lot of pencil pushers, and you got the golf guy, and you got somebody else. Yeah, we're just a bunch of characters, and the Disney person. And she goes, the next question is, when are you coming? And she's just so like,
yeah,
you
she didn't have quite the right beat. And I'm wondering, though, if we're going to come, though, whether they're going to pick up the tab at Joffrey's or the restaurant. I think they shot the commercial at.
Yeah, nice place.
Think Arlen's going to spot us the bit of lunch?
I'd like some lunch there. I love your accent.
Yeah. So, Simon, when did you come to the United States? Has it been a while?
Yeah, you know, I've been here now, gosh, you know, almost 10 years. I came here in 2000.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And what made you move here? I mean, what were you looking for?
Well, you know, I was living in London, and London's an amazing city. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's funny, actually, we're talking about the weather, because one of the things that is sort of tough about England is that the weather is kind of damp the whole time, mm-hmm. and it tends to bring out a sort of a negative attitude in people. Mm-hmm. So people are sort of, you know, they don't have the benefit of all the good drugs out here like Prozac, but, you know, so it's, everyone's a little bit beating a little bit lower. And I you know, I'm very positive. I like positive people.
Yeah.
And, you know, I thought America would be a good place for me. Uh-huh. So I'd never been to LA before.
Really?
Yeah, and then my wife at the time, who'd previously worked for Polygram Films, said, you know, she was like, yeah, it's a great idea, because she wanted to come back here anyway. So great. So we just got our bags, and then we came over.
Really?
Wow.
Yes. Yeah. And then I was like, oh my God, this is a different world.
Yeah.
It's completely different. I'd been on the East Coast a lot, and I'd visited San Diego for a couple of days, but... The Brits normally say who come out of here, because there's about 200,000 Brits, I think, in LA. It takes you about 3 or 4 years.
I would say I'm Texan, you know? But it
You're
still
Texan,
took me.
Right.
It still was like, what? Yeah.
Yeah.
And not in the ways you think.
Right.
It's not the, you know, it's not the same kind of culture shock that people would expect it to be. It's stuff that I came here when I was really young too, so there's stuff I just couldn't imagine, you know, like I stayed in a real shitty, you know, flip tricking, they flip the tricks in these hotels. What are they called? Whatever. I stayed in one of those. It smelled so bad. And, I mean, you just don't know these things. Like, there's a lot of stuff you don't know. I was like, it's like the Voyager Inn, or something. It was just bad.
Yeah.
It was like Hookerville Lane.
Oh.
It's one of those things. We're like, hey, we can't afford a hotel. This is $30 a night. And it's like unbelievable in LA because everything's like 100 and up, right, for a shitty hotel.
Yeah.
And we get in there and it's like hot and balmy and there's just DNA smells everywhere. And we're like, we can't do this. We can't do this. But there's stuff like that that you just didn't know.
Yeah, you know, it is kind of different. I thought the experience I had, I was in Marina Del Rey in the Oakwoods there. So we're a little bit safe. I don't think people are turning tricks because most of the people are over 50. But, you know, one of the things that happened was I was watching the television and, you know, my wife at the time, she went to Kinko's to do some copying, get resumes out and all that good mm-hmm. stuff. And so I'm watching the television and I'm looking at this shooting going on. A cop got shot
mm-hmm.
and I'm watching it and I can hear all these helicopters outside. And I thought, I go outside and have a look and there's just about 5 or 6 of them circling.
Really?
And then I look at the TV and then I'm seeing a picture of Kinko's.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, I wonder if that's in Marina Del Rey. So I get on the cell phone, and I call, and she, and you know, and my ex goes, you know, well, yeah, we're not allowed out of Kinko's because some guys just shot someone.
Oh,
so
gosh.
She was in Kinko's for like 6 hours.
Really stuck in there, huh?
Yeah, so that's my first week in LA. I'm like, holy crap.
There's something about this town that's called a welcome to LA package, and it usually involves a shooting and your car getting towed and something like that. So, yeah, I think that's right on point.
Is that how they initiate you here in this town?
You just fall into it.
Yeah.
It finds you. It knows that you're nice. It knows that you're open.
Yeah.
You're looking for newness, and it wants to get you go back.
But I also think in that particular case, Kinko's has been known to set up ploys like that. Because if they square you in for 6 hours and you get on that internet, you're going to owe them some money. So.
That makes sense, man. Yeah, that's not a cheap place.
Yeah, I was wondering why I was still paying, you know, $10 a month.
Yeah, there you go.
What did you do in England before you moved out here?
Well, I was a coach. I was doing life coaching
mm-hmm.
and also coaching people in triathlon as well.
And oh, so you were doing triathlons back then too?
Yeah,
huh?
Back in the day, you know, it's I'm now into my 17th year.
Really?
Of,
wow.
Of doing triathlon.
So
and,
cool.
Mm-hmm,
that's
and,
amazing.
Yeah, back when I started, they had shopping baskets on the front. Mm-hmm. And of the bicycles, there was none of these like expensive bikes. I mean,
were they aluminum shopping baskets?
Well, I think that was the advanced category. Yeah. You know, in the sort of the age group was like us, you know, didn't do that. And they still had the sort of those speedos where, particularly when the women, everything would hang out the back. It was all very very different. But the races were only about $5.
Uh-huh.
You know, now you have to actually mortgage your house to get in.
Really?
Yeah.
You know, to get into somebody's race, and they're becoming very very packed and. But the I was excited to kind of talk with you about this to get your opinions because certainly in the world of professional sport now around cycling and triathlon, the big buzz that all of the people are talking about is the Landisgate affair with Floyd Landis accusing Lance Armstrong, mm-hmm. David Zabriskie, and George Hincapie, and basically anyone in cycling right now of systematic doping. So, I've certainly been busy this week doing other radio interviews on this topic, and people have been calling me, you know, did he or didn't he?
Can you break it down for people that have no clue? Systematic doping, what is it? I mean, I get it, what the words mean, but what does that really mean?
Yeah, no, it's a really good question. What it is there's various different types of it, different forms. But essentially, there's two main things that the athletes have been doing in the sport of cycling. Is one is that you take, say, a pint of your blood, mm-hmm. okay, that after you've been training at altitude for a period of time. So say you go up to Northern California, train in the mountains. That increases the amount of red blood cells in your body.
Okay.
So you then extract the blood, and then when you go back down to sea level, just before competition or during competition, when your blood may get, you know, depleted, uh-huh. you put in the new blood.
That is crazy.
That is awesome.
That is just like so like Total Recall. Just, I mean, these people that are just like, I'm going to win, like transfer my blood. Like, that's crazy.
Well, you know, it gets worse than that.
Okay.
A couple of the other athletes who have been found for doping actually had cow's blood.
Cow's blood.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, how does that really? Work?
Because cows train at high altitudes.
Exactly. Especially in California because they're happy and fit. And so that's one form of it. And it's been actually amazing because, you know, I went and charted the sort of the doping scandal inside of cycling. And, you know, because it's a very, you know, people have to understand who are listening. This is one of the most physically demanding sports in the world. Right. I mean, every day you're doing, you know, 100 miles and certain times gaining 12,000 foot of altitude. Now, for the average person, just to do 100 miles flat on a bike is a significant achievement, but right. to race it day in, day out for 3 weeks they do. It's almost, you know, sort of there's been debate whether it's physically possible. Mm-hmm. But anyway, you know, starting out, and for example, I think the first recorded case was in 1925, and two French brothers failed to complete the race. They abandoned early on. They were then investigated by a doctor, and it was found that they were taking horse tranquilizers and cocaine.
Really?
Back then?
Back in the day.
And how do they expect to finish with a horse tranquilizer? Wouldn't they be like eating grass and just like sleeping and?
Well, what happened actually when the tour first started? Actually, a lot of the stages were 400 miles, and so they'd go through the night.
Yeah.
And so it started in the 20s, and then a lot of the military had been using amphetamines to keep people awake, you know, during the sort of first and second World War. Yeah. So the athletes started taking those.
I see.
And then it moved on. They're taking Ritalin, which is now used for ADHD.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then after that, it moved into the blood transfusions, which I spoke about, and then more recently EPO and SERA, which are you know, they are compounds that have been hormones and that have been developed for cancer treatment to help, you know, because when you cancer, you're losing blood cells. So it's introduced into the patient to help them recover. Well, cyclists have adopted that as well.
Really?
So, you know, you've got this huge, you know, it's just sort of, and then it becomes a program. And so all these doctors get involved. Who are administering the drugs to the athletes. Mm. And, you know, so it's been huge. And, of course, you know, you've got someone like Lance Armstrong who is beyond cycling.
Right.
I mean, he's, you know, you say Lance Armstrong, pretty much anyone's going to know
exactly.
him.
Exactly. Or if you say cycling, you think Lance Armstrong.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, he earns rock star salaries.
Right.
You know, he's, $25 million a year. That's, you know, That's up there with NBA, NFL teams,
but he's
right?
Like set the most records, right? And he's beat them or something like that.
Yeah, he's won the Tour de France 7 times, which is the most in history, and he came back after having cancer. So his story is an American story. It's a you know, it's a great story. But he's always been tainted with these allegations.
Right.
And forever, right? Cuz everybody because you kind of expect it that the guy at the top, you want to bring him down, right? Kind of like you can't do this.
Well, I think it's that, and I think it's also that just about everybody else in the sport has been busted for doping, yeah. You know.
Okay.
And it has this, you know, it has this history. There's a record of doping offenses and systematic doping inside of teams.
Is the blood thing considered doping?
Oh, absolutely.
It is. It is. Even if you're like, dude, it was my own blood. I just got it when it was a little more fluffy, and I just repackaged it and drank it. Like, and how do you do that discreetly?
Well, yeah, exactly. That's hard. That's why you'd go to somewhere like a different country. Say, for example, you might slip over the border to Mexico, mm-hmm. and instead of getting your ganja or whatever you might get over there, you go and get your blood transfusion, then you come back and you're like, hey. So it's like instead of having your coffee in the morning, imagine having like 100 cups of coffee in the morning, and then going out and training, you're going to feel very different. It's a significantly different experience from what I've taught,
right,
what I've heard.
Yeah.
And that's illegal? Is it illegal to do that? Or?
Yeah, because it's going to completely change your... I mean, look at the, you know, you can do things that you wouldn't previously be able to
okay.
do.
Okay, so it's not that...
I get what you're saying, though, because it seems like if you made your blood that way, and then it's your stuff, and
but
it's not been altered.
It's not that it's synthetic.
Unfair,
it's, yeah, I think it's what they're saying. It's an unfair advantage, but it's not that it's a chemical. It's not a chemical thing, right?
It is an unfair advantage, and it's actually chemically very dangerous.
Oh, it is? Okay, that's what I'm not understanding.
It's very dangerous because, you know, you hear a lot of times, actually, of cyclists dying of a heart attack, premature death. I mean, these are people who physically fit specimens getting heart attacks because their blood gets too thick.
Oh.
Oh. Okay. Yeah.
You can also get infections because imagine, you know, for example, if I borrow Sam's blood because he's fitter than me, and I inject Sam's blood into me, and there's the whole potential for infection. Not that, you know, you have infections, but, you know, theoretically there could be, you know.
Yeah,
and so it's very, very dangerous.
Yeah.
And certainly not to be tried, you know, at all. So it's so there's real sort of medical reasons to stop it. It's also unfair, you know, because you can get a significant advantage in terms... The advantage is in two ways, really. One is that your performance is going to go up. So... You know, the ease to say, for example, you know, you can ride your bike at 10 miles an hour and your heart rate is 100 beats a minute. Well, you may better ride your bike at 10 miles an hour, but your heart rate is 30. This is much easier.
Right.
That doesn't cost you as much energy. But then you also, the next day, you're not as tired. So, because you can recover fast, and so there's a lot of benefits, and, you know.
I'm starting to like it, but it's bad, right? We don't like it because it's unfair.
But I also wonder with all the developments and supplements and nutrition, like, what is fair anymore? I mean, I understand those things aren't as drastic, but you know, there's so many things out there that are
like, where's the
replacing
boundaries?
Things so quickly, you know, in your cells and everything else.
But I would imagine natural things probably don't qualify as doping, right?
Or yeah, that's right. And actually, you know, you also brought up a really good point in that, for example, if you're, you know, say, for example, my testosterone levels are really low, okay, naturally, is it cheating for me to then supplement testosterone, so I'm the same as everybody else?
Right.
You know, it's kind of it's almost a valid question.
Yeah.
You know,
what
are the markers?
Yeah.
Right.
Well, that's kind of like saying, oh, it's not fair. He's more physically fit than I am. That's not fair. I need to then take more testosterone. But some dudes, you know, balding has to do with testosterone. Mm-hmm. That's why bald dudes love me. Love me. Baldies are losing their hair because they have so much testosterone in their body. Look it up.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just saying, not everybody wants to be bald.
What the hell are you
didn't
talking
make any
about?
Sense
which is the
point.
Which is no, the second message to take away in addition to what was it, Gazette enchiladas or something?
Gazelle enchiladas or burritos.
Yeah.
But no, my point is that everybody's been given a certain level of, you know, I mean, if it's like below a functioning level, you know what I mean? Maybe then, but if you just don't, you know what I mean?
I absolutely hear you, and there's another underlying point as well is that, you know, it comes down to ethics. And being able to, whether you can sleep at night. And to me, you know, if you're going to participate in a sport or in anything in life, if you deceive people. And what was really, you know, very huge in this particular story is that the guy who broke the story was called Floyd Landis, and he won the Tour de France in 2006. Mm-hmm. 2006, 2007, one of the two. And he was stripped of his title. He said he was wrongly accused, and that the doping was, you know, it was a mix-up of the samples. They're trying to frame him. You know, every type of excuse in the world. And for 4 years, and he told everybody that he was innocent and he'd been wrongly accused and wrongly stripped of his title. Mm. He borrowed or was given. Actually, he was given $1 million by people who believed him. He set up a charity to help his legal defense, and so he took $1 million from people like you and me, mm-hmm. on the basis that he was an American hero and hadn't doped. And he was lying his butt off.
Really?
Oh, my gosh. Wow. Seriously?
Right? Yeah. And so to me, that's really the central theme for me. And when I think about participation in sports, really in life, really, but we're talking about sport here today, mm. is some people, you know, they say one thing, they're doing something else.
Mm.
Yeah.
And there's something fundamentally wrong with that.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
You know?
Especially in competition, you know? I mean, you have to have the spirit, you know? I wanted to ask you how far do you have to go in a triathlon? I mean, it's running, swimming, and cycling, right? Yes. So how far is each one?
Well, that's a great question. And well, triathlon is means, you know, tri is three. Essentially, it's three sports. So you do have swimming, you know, as you said, swimming, biking, and running.
Right.
And there's various different disciplines. Now, the most famous one here in the United States is going to be the Hawaii Ironman. So let's start with that. So, and then the other events trickle down.
Mm.
But the Ironman's like the gladiator of triathlons, right?
It's definitely the gladiator of triathlons. It's a totally mad event. You know, goes on for a long time, and it's physically incredibly difficult because, you know, you're swimming, you know, over 2 miles.
2 miles.
Yeah, you're gonna bike 112 miles.
Jeez.
And then you're gonna run a marathon.
That's some shit right there.
Yeah.
That's some shit.
How the hell?
Philip and I worked.
And you have to do it one after another, right?
You have to do it consecutively, and you have to do it in Hawaii. Now, I don't know if you've been on holiday in Hawaii. Mm-hmm. I went there last year. It is hot. I didn't want to run a mile, let alone 24 miles.
Wow.
So that becomes a huge factor.
The heat.
Right.
A huge factor.
Wow. We worked the LA Tri. We were with Toyota, the last event that they just had, which was really, really fun. We weren't in it, but we were in it. We won. But it was really...
As a team.
But it was really, really exciting to see, I mean, these people come in, and the endorphin level is ridiculous. It's almost like even if you're not the one participating, you can feel... It, like, you could feel the rush of, like,
yeah.
Everybody's just, like, crazy. But they weren't doing, obviously, the Ironman. They were doing, I guess, what is it, a mile swim? And then, what? How many, was it, 25-mile bike? And then
yeah, it was much shorter.
A 6-mile run or something
like
that?
Made me feel much better, because I'd like to get involved in those. But
yeah,
the Ironman would be pretty tough.
Yeah, you know, absolutely, Philip. And the, well, the sport, actually, is very interesting. From the governing body, they release the statistics and send them to me. Now, last year, about 1.3 million people did triathlons, and around about 80% of those people did sprint triathlon. Mm-hmm. And a sprint triathlon is 750-meter swim, 12.5-mile bike, and a 3-mile run. So that's eminently achievable.
Right.
Okay, you may have to learn to swim, or you may have to, you know, do a bit of biking, but it's achievable. And so what's really nice about the sport, and what's actually attracting most people, It's not the Ironman. It's actually the fact that you can do something kind of a little different. It is a challenge to go out there,
right.
But it's achievable.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, and,
right.
and certainly for me in my private coaching practice, I'm getting a lot of people, you know, who have, you know, day jobs, and they're coming out and they just want to do a triathlon. They don't want to do the Ironman. They don't necessarily want to break any world records.
Mm-hmm.
But they want to have that sense of achievement.
So many people out there. I saw so many different shapes and sizes, and they were just, I mean, there's just something, you're like, I mean, I know when you're a competitive sports person, it's a total different ball game, but they, the people that were out there, it's like they're already freaking winners. I hate to sound like a Hallmark, you know, message, but it's true, because people that were like, some of them were like, man, I've lost 50 pounds and they're still carrying some junk in the trunk. But you're like, man, get it on. They're doing their thing. But I overheard Toyota sponsored the event, but that the participant or the amount of people watching and that come out to support has dropped. Is it because of the cost, I guess, or have you noticed that, a trend in as far as spectators?
You know, I've actually seen the opposite of that. Well, you know, I think that the USAT, so in America there were about 10 years ago, and I'll speak to your question too. I'm just going to talk about the athletes first.
No, do it.
There's, I think there were something like 15,000 registered triathletes. Mm-hmm. That's 10 years ago. Now there's 155,000.
Oh my God! Mm. Wow.
So it's a exponential growth inside of the sport. And what I've been noticing is I've seen more spectators at events.
Oh, okay.
Particularly with Malibu now, which is a celebrity race, which we can talk about because it's a being in its own.
Oh yeah. I bet.
But the your point brings up, my response to it is that the triathlon needs to make a shift if it's going to shift from something that's an aspirational event. For people like you and I to go out and have fun at. If it's going to shift to something that people watch on television, it really has to change.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Because it's not that interesting. I mean, for example, if you go and watch an Ironman, how much fun is it to say, okay, all right, Jeff has gone off on the swim and I'll see you in an hour and a half.
Yeah.
And then, I'll see you 6 hours later on the bike and then I'll watch you crawl across the finish line 8 hours later. It's kind of boring.
Right.
I mean, even for someone who loves the sport like me, I would never go and watch an Ironman. I haven't watched an Ironman and I won't.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I prefer the shorter distances myself.
Mm-hmm.
But I may go and do an Ironman, but I don't even watch Olympic distance, which is unless although actually the Olympic distance sport, they've started to showcase it by having loops.
I see. Oh, nice.
So
then you can watch them.
Yeah,
NASCAR effect.
Yeah, and so that's more fun. And actually, what's driving, I think, the sort of particularly here in LA and in the larger cities, is that corporations are getting involved. You mentioned like Toyota.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
I'm for example the coach of Summit Team. Summit Entertainment have a team. I also assist Sony Triathlon Team and the Paramount teams. Mm. So these teams are getting together.
Right.
So you're getting groups who are coming to races.
Lots of
they have little tents, and that's kind of fun,
Yeah.
Because it's really, one of the challenges of the sport, I guess, is that you're doing it on your own very often.
Right.
And it's nice to have a team.
Right,
so there's been a lot of growth, and I think it's a really exciting development in the sport. The sport's not so much about the professional athletes, it's more about, from the ground roots, we've got, corporations coming in and groups coming in and having a really good time. And I think that's just, to me, really good for the sport.
Right,
yeah, that was really awesome. It was even awesome just to be there. Didn't you love it? Why did you want to do one?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I hadn't really considered doing them before because, again, I thought they were all, that Ironman distance, and that's like... To me, I think that's a whole lifestyle change when you're, training for that kind of race.
Oh,
but
yeah. Oh,
when
yeah.
you see everyday people out there,
just doing their thing.
Getting into it, it's great.
Yeah, they're like hardcore. But it's kind of an affluent sport, right? I mean, as far as the cost and then the bike and everything. Even if you do it on the lower scale, you got to have a little bread, a little lettuce.
Yeah, it is. And it's particularly when you start off. Because you got to go buy a bike, and then you go in the bike store, and it's like, okay, well, $1,000 for the bike, and then you got to get the shoes, you got to get the pedals, you got to get the wetsuit, and then you're like, it's doubled. So yes, it is. And but what I will say though, once you bought the bike, it's going to last you if you look after it, forever. And wetsuit, you buy that once. So once you're in it.
It's
not as bad, but it can be a little daunting to start with, and that's typically for people who come to me, and one of the first questions is how am I going to get a bike, it's hard, and you don't want to buy a secondhand one because it can be, you don't know what you're getting.
Oh, okay.
So it can be a little expensive, but my advice to people who maybe are listening or thinking about doing some of that, just get a really, get a nice basic road bike, something you could use maybe if you're going to cycle to work or whatever as well, and then just start there.
Hmm.
Right.
Or find a friend and beg and borrow.
Beg and borrow.
Yeah. Yeah. But I would imagine, in the beginning, you have to do a lot of training, a lot of practice and things like that. So you don't need to have the fanciest bike. Right? Yeah. I remember that bike one of your guests brought in the other day. Remember? That was like, what did he say? It was like $5,000 for that bike or something?
Kind of expensive.
And change, actually. Yeah. The new system that's come out is called DTI by Shimano. And, I think that certainly when I started riding, all the shifters were on the tube.
Mm-hmm.
And so you reach down and grab a lever and change the gear. And then... They started out with a change where you could, instead of the where the brakes are, you could change by, moving a hand, either right to left to change the gears. And that was the new shifters. But the latest ones are electronic. So all you have to do is you just touch the, there's a little little button next to your brakes, and you just touch the button, and then the bike changes gear.
Really?
And so it's really cool. So it's like, it's almost sort of foolproof. It's like the difference between a manual car and an automatic car.
Yeah.
So you can just go and you're sitting there. I mean, the only invention they haven't done yet is to have the thing pedal for you, which I think would be significant.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah, that would help a lot of people.
Yeah.
I think that's actually called a motorbike, but it's cool. And actually, though, there's those bikes. You know, Sam mentioned it. It's a fantastic bike, but you know, you get that new system, you're looking at $10,000. So if you really want to go for it, and it really attracts guys who love gadgets, you can really spend whatever you like on the sport.
Wow, that's amazing.
You know, yeah. But it doesn't change the fact that at the end of the day, you've got to do the training.
Right. Yeah, you got to do the work, man.
Yeah.
Maybe that guy that you went out with last night, he might have spent his entire limit on a new digital shifter.
I'm going to ask him if that's what happened.
That's probably what he needed.
And that's very noble.
That's actually really noble. I went on a date last night. The dude, like, car declined. It was really awkward. We don't have to relive the experience again. But I was like, okay. But no, and it happens. But no, maybe it did happen because he was like, I'm going to go be a triathlete.
He could be some sort of world-class athlete with an S on his chest, and we just don't know.
Maybe. I'm like, damn. Well, he's married to his triathlete then.
Yeah. So we're talking to Simon Gowan from the Simon Gowan Triathlon Show. Tell us a little bit about the show. What do you talk about there and things? Obviously, probably a lot of the stuff we're talking about here, but it's probably for more advanced people that are into it, not like us laymen.
Well, you know, I started the show about a year ago at your good station, Sam. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. We love the show.
And, you know, what I tried to do right from the start is appeal to, you know, people who are in Denmark or in Santa Monica or in, you know, on the East Coast. So a triathlete everywhere. Mm. And also maybe people who were thinking about getting into the sport. And so what I typically do with the show is break it down into segments. Mm-hmm. So I'll feature an area. So I'll interview a professional athlete. Say, for example, today I'm going to Denmark.
Really?
So I've got people calling in from Denmark. Wow. And so I'll interview a professional athlete and then an age grouper, some, you know, who has an interesting story. And then maybe a charity that is, you know, that one of the people is associated with. And then also a coach. So, you know, I want to provide people with information about what's going on inside the sport, maybe how they can improve their own sport.
Right.
And then learn also from, you know, interesting characters. And there's some, you know, the sport really attracts some just amazing individuals. Like, for example, we had Scott Rigsby come on the show a few months back. And here's a guy who was in Georgia, and he was sitting on the back of one of these truck beds that have the tool kit in. And he got hit by a semi and dragged a couple hundred foot.
Wow.
6 years later, after multiple operations, he'd lost one leg at the start. Multiple operations, he just decided to become a double amputee. And he was he got a settlement from the insurance company, and just his life started to go downhill. Got into drugs, got into alcohol, was generally, you know, just falling apart. And he walked into a drugstore one day and saw on the cover, I think it was Sarah Reinstein, who was the first single amputee, she was the first below-the-knee amputee to compete in triathlon, and amazing lady. And he saw that and said, well, I can do that. And he started training and eventually completed the Hawaii Ironman.
What the F? Are you kidding?
You know? Yeah, you know, and it's like, and then you've got another great example is there's, you know, some people get scared of swimming in the ocean, and we get scared in our life in general. Yeah. Well, imagine if you're blind. Okay, there's a lady out there who is a really good triathlete, and four or five of her friends, and they're blind. And they go and jump in the ocean and swim.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, really? I mean, you know.
How do they do that? How do you even navigate? Like, you get on the bike then and everything? You just, like...
Well, they have, you know, they have a guide.
Okay.
So someone will come and they'll be, you know, they'll be attached together. And they'll do a tandem on the bike. Mm-hmm. But I think it's, you know, it's just so great to see people, you know, who can, you know, take difficult circumstances in their life and then translate it into something amazing, and complete something amazing, and then be an inspiration. Like Scott, for example, he helps wounded war vets and people with handicaps, and teaches them about, you know, through his own example,
yeah,
about how to make something of your life. And I just think, you know, to me, that's just amazing. And
it is. It's very inspiring, you know, because, I mean, here I am healthy and everything, and I don't even attempt these things. And then these people really, really devote their lives to it, you know. It's really amazing, you know.
It's like I ran the L.A. Marathon. Well, I ran 17 miles of it, and I didn't sign up. I just jumped in. And it was,
I did that, too.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Did you really? Did you do it at the start?
No, I just jumped in right by my house.
It's called banditing.
Well, I've always wanted to run it, but I didn't really put forth the training. I run a lot, but not like, you know, 26 miles every day run, you know. So I ate a lot of carbs that week, and I was like, well, this shit's not going to burn itself off. And the night before, I was like, I'm going to run the marathon because I've been saying I want to do it. So I buckled it up, got my sports bras on, put my hair back, pat my weaves down. Mile 17, mama jumped in, shit. And I was stressing out. It was like driving without insurance. I kept looking over my shoulder like somebody's going to notice I didn't have like a ticket thing on or whatever. But I could tell he thinks this is morally wrong. I had to go for it. But anyway, my point is, it was sold out anyway. It didn't matter if I paid for it, it was sold out. So, but I did. I ran the 17 miles, and it was really amazing just to see all the different types of people that are doing it and the different fitness levels and then the age groups. And then people, some people had like, were like pushing wheelchairs of friends, and like, they're just all the different causes was so incredibly inspiring. And you go, man, if a grandma's beating me, you know, like some of these ladies, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Grandmas are passing me up. I'm like, this is not right. It's not right.
The levels of people involved with the, I don't know if it's probably the same with shorter length triathlons and maybe even the Ironman, where, you know, there's people that get involved that are at the front of the line and they're trying to stay at the front the whole time, and, you know, that's what they're training for. But then there's a ton of people that are involved just because that's what their New Year's resolution was, or that's what their promise to their kid was, or that's what their, you know, it's just like all these different, like, this is the bane of my existence. Like, this is my accomplishment. This is, you know, what I have to get through.
Yeah.
So that's kind of really cool to see, too.
Yeah, I used some bragging rights off of it, even though I didn't do the whole thing and I jumped in and didn't pay for it. I still brag about it because I was hurting, man. I was hurting.
That's how you paid.
Yeah, that's how I did pay. Actually, I got kind of got sick afterwards. They say you can get, you know, I mean, I didn't train properly either, but I did pretty good. I did pretty good.
Yeah.
You carb loaded, though, so that's good.
Did you run the marathon, Simon?
You know, I went out and watched it on San Vicente, and you know, my preference is 5 and 10 Ks.
I see.
You know, but I was really struck by, you know, the just how amazing it was to watch the people. I watched the elites come through, and they're phenomenal because you just don't see people like that in real life, you know, normal life.
Right.
They just look amazing, make it look easy. The lead girl was just like flying down Sam Sunny like it was her first mile.
Really?
It was something else. I was just like, wow, that's incredible.
Mm.
And then, you like you said, you know, you see all the inspiring stories, and it's great. And I had that bleep. It was actually a fleeting sort of moment of, I want to do this.
Mm.
And then I sobered up and I got on.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to hold on to the moment, you know, but it's like, because I felt the same way when we worked the triathlon. I was like, I'm doing this. But then I was like, okay, yeah, I'm going to take out, like you said, a mortgage to get the bike and everything. I'll, you know, stick to the marathon. But it was really cool to just do it. But I really haven't been in that much pain. I mean, even though I've ran like 13 miles before, but it was, you know, better, just more training. But just going out and doing the 17, even though it's still just 17, it was like, it was pain.
Yeah. Well, we've got to wrap up. Simon, thank you so much for joining us. Simon Gowan, of course, of the Simon Gowan Triathlon Show, and he's coming up next on Channel 2. Thank you so much, Simon. Very inspiring stuff.
Thank you,
stuff,
Simon.
You know?
Thank you.
Normally,
thanks
I don't
on.
Talk about sports and stuff, so it was really like, you know, answered a lot of questions for me, so I appreciate it.
Thanks,
Philip, thank you so much for joining us, man.
You're
a lot of fun, and I hope you find someone soon. You know, on the set or off, it doesn't really matter. as long as it's a woman and she's attractive.
That's all
right, everyone. Kira, thank you so much. And we'll see everybody tomorrow.
You have been listening to Sam and Kara in the Morning, which airs every weekday from 9 a.m. until 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, originating from the Los Angeles Talk Radio studios. If you have questions about the show or would like to inquire about sponsorship opportunities, please direct all correspondence to info@latalkradio.com. Sam and Kara in the Morning is a production of LA Talk Radio. We say what we want. We'll be right back.